Welcome to the Waldorf Gridiron Club podcast, your home for all things football at Waldorf University, the best small college football experience in America. Hosted by Andy Buffington and me, Troy Thompson, from the secret bunker beneath Bullsdorf Field.
Welcome to this episode of the Waldorf Gridiron Club podcast.
Welcome back, Andy.
Oh, geez. I'll tell you what. 2 weeks ago, I tried to get into the bunker. Mm. You know, I get to the keypad. I punch in the code.
Yeah.
I look in the retinal scanner.
Exactly.
I go ahead and put my thumb on the thumbprint reader.
Yep.
And slides open. I take the elevator. I don't know. What is that? Probably about 60 feet down.
It's somewhere in there. It's definitely safe for bunker
and
barrier.
Yeah. Boom. I get to the stairs. Wet paint.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, maybe that was there a little bit. So I took a step, ruined a brand new pair of Converse Chuck Taylors.
Ooh, yeah. I'm sorry about that.
No, and that was my fault for not believing the sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, I apologize for not doing anything last week since I was still a little salty about ruining the new pair of Chuck Taylors.
Yeah. That's all right, though.
White canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Classic.
They just don't make them they do make them like that, but
they do, but they're like 60, 80 bucks now or something like that, where it used to be for 15 bucks. You walk in the store and you're, well, those are basketball shoes. Your mom would tell you. And
it's like,
well, who wears that?
Yeah.
You know,
who wears this?
Lou Alcindor?
This clod of flat, no arch support.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, that was, probably. That's all good. I get it.
People probably wonder why. When you take the elevator down, you have to then go down some more stairs. But
just the way it was constructed.
It is. It's kind of a strange.
Probably a Cold War. Cold War.
Maybe.
Thing, something
like
that.
I don't know why either. I mean, certainly we didn't build the bunker. We've just been renovating it. Who knows why?
Yeah, makes it's no like sense. That.
But yeah, the stairs, you got to get down and then. You still got to go down even further.
Yeah. And it's only probably about 18 or 20. You know, and it's just all one long flight, and then it opens up into the mess hall, and then there's the conference room and the command center.
It's amazing.
To your left, and then of course there's the studio.
Right. Really, it's kind of modeled after what I believe is under the mall at the nation's capital.
Oh, absolutely, it is.
Is what I'm thinking.
100%.
Yeah, connects to the Smithsonian.
And we can't be letting people know, because then the congressional delegation would want to come here to Four City and feel safe during.
Next time there's a pandemic, the governor's going to want to be there instead of in Des Moines in that bunker.
Yeah, I get it.
But we're going to talk. Speaking of Chuck Taylors, though.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about equipment today.
We're going to go back and let's get a little nostalgic.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the good old days. And I can hear Bruce Springsteen playing in the back in my head right now.
Okay.
Glory days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they will pass you by, folks.
They do. It's amazing how quickly time flies. It's commencement for the high school this weekend and probably for a lot of other people around the country.
You bet.
And so, obviously, we're going through that with our son, Jack. He's going to go to Waldorf and play football, so we're excited for that. He's going to go to state track this weekend, and so we're busy. But it's just my youngest son, Colin, who's a freshman in high school, said way back from something. He's like, I can't believe how fast this year went. He says, does it slow down when you get out of school? And I was like,
nope.
No, it really doesn't. It just flies by. When you're in it, it seems like sometimes it can take forever, depending on what the task is or what you're doing. You can't wait to get done with something. Mm-hmm. And then once it's gone, it's like, man, that just flew by.
It does. I mean, thinking that, you know, because what we're talking here, it's the 17th of May.
Mm-hmm.
Commencement this weekend. Then the weekend following, it's Memorial Day, and then it's June. And before you know it, it's going to be, you know, hey, we got 2 weeks till the kids come back. And
right.
It's going to be exciting times to get the players back on campus, get Jack checked in for everything that he's going to be doing with Woo Ball this coming year. But it was never put more eloquently than a former sheriff that I worked with for quite a few years. When he retired, there was a local reporter asked him, Sheriff, did it go fast? And he said, it sure did. He said, the years just fly by. but the days take forever.
And isn't that the case? It's been a few years since you and I wore pads to play the game.
Yes. Yeah.
I just played in high school. So
I did too.
Yeah.
High school. I had opportunities in college, but I was in love. And I didn't want to leave her behind. So
totally understandable.
She was younger than I, and she was still in school. So, and one of the great, I will never regret a single decision I ever made, but my last time, wearing pads, other than, you know, Sundays when I'm in the locker room by myself, I get all suited up and just
dress up.
Oh yeah. Exact. Take pictures.
Run into the wall.
Oh yeah, absolutely. See how good those helmets really are. And but no, 1987 was the last time that I suited up on the gridiron. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you. Or
92. Would have been 92, yeah, okay. A little bit later, but not much later. And the things, I bet we were still, I don't know how quickly equipment advances. You have probably some greater insight into that, particularly now that the sports industry is a multi-billion dollar, billions and billions.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And you know, you talk about getting your mom would say those Chuck Taylors, those are basketball shoes, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were just kind of at the beginning of, not the beginning, but I guess, it was kind of the beginning of every sport kind of having its own stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Jordan particularly kind of inspired a lot of that. It seemed like, you know, the basketball phenomenon, I don't know if that came first necessarily for sports equipment, probably not, but.
Well, think about the Air Jordan.
Exactly.
That those first white and red and black Air Jordans came out, I remember I was quite literally the first person to walk out of Decker Sports with a pair of Chuck Taylors. My gosh, Air Jordans.
Yeah.
God bless my mother for doing this for me, but, you had to pre-order them. And so, you know, we got in, we got them pre-ordered, we got my size and everything else. And, I literally skipped school that morning. My mother drove me to Mason City. This was probably, 84, 85. I don't know what year they were released, but they were released on a certain date. Nobody could have them beforehand, except for, of course, Michael Jordan.
Right.
And we went there, and that really, in my opinion, that was kind of some of those birth pangs of this huge marketing for somebody like Michael Jordan and footwear. And of course then followed the windsuits and the warm-up suits and the starter jackets and all those really great things. And it's blossomed and ballooned into like you had said, a multi-billion dollar industry.
Right.
And the technology has changed so significantly.
And faster probably. I would think that clearly football was heavy on equipment from, when they decided, hey, we should stop, you know, having people die on the field, you know, type of thing. These thick sweaters are not getting it done. We need to, so the leather helmets change to the, you know, eventually you get to the plastic things that we've got, but even the face masks, you know, remember, the kickers in the old days, like that one bar,
single bars. Well, and think about somebody like, you know, you're a Vikings fan.
Yeah.
Fran Tarkenton.
Right.
I mean, he just had the two bars with, you know, the two horizontal bars with the two vertical bars that were right in the middle. And that was, that was probably the pinnacle of technology for the early 1970s.
Yeah. And it kind of went through an ugly, chunky phase, football equipment. It seems like, I'm maybe not saying this correctly, but it's for a while there. When I played, there was, it seemed like linemen, the face masks were
massive.
And
I had one of those face masks that you had a bar down the middle, and then you probably had four or five across.
Yeah.
And in that meshing, there was two or three, it was a complete mess.
Yeah.
And, but man, you looked really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
You looked
really cool. Then the visors came.
Never had those.
No, I certainly, why would I have a visor? But some, but they did come in the 90s where they were wearing the visors. And I didn't ever think very much of the visors myself.
Still don't.
Yeah, but
I understand, and they do have value, especially for your skill positions, specialty positions, you know, more of your offensive, defensive skill where there's a lot of hands just kind of flying around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the offensive line to an extent, you don't see too many offensive linemen liking that because they get down in a stance and
yeah.
they're going to drip, you know, their stank sweat all yeah. over the.
And they yeah. fog up, and oh, yeah. that's probably better too that they didn't, but I mean, mouth guards have gotten so much better. I remember, and I think they're still the basic. The basic yeah. one is you just drop it in the hot water. And
well, you're supposed to,
you know.
Unless you're like some of these Waldorf players that they don't, I mean, they don't put their mouthpieces in often during practice. Just, and you can see, even on, I mean, from the pros down, you can see they have to have them on their equipment. They have mm-hmm. to have them with them. But I don't know what the rule is on whether they have to actually have them in their mouth. Now, that helps for a lot of things. It's going to keep your teeth from smacking together if you take a shot.
Yeah.
It also helps with concussions.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, but they have, you know, the kind now where you can, you know, they got little, it looks like pacifiers sometimes. They got little
yeah.
fans that turn on them. They got, looks like teeth. Or looks
yeah.
like, it looks like everything. And,
yeah.
I mean, you can spend $25 or $30 on a mouthpiece or, like what we do here at Waldorf is like, you need a mouthpiece? There you go. And I don't know if they ever actually put them in hot water. Zach Throne, when he came back after he used his COVID year, so he took mm-hmm. a year off and mm-hmm. came back. During one of the games, he misplaced his mouthpiece. And I think it was actually even before the game started. So I'm back and forth between the D-jack and the field looking for something laying there. And I picked up three, and he tried them all. And then he ended up just finding one on the ground and said, this'll do.
Oh, man. Why not?
And you tell somebody that's not around football, you know, because he had to have one.
Yeah.
It's like, meh.
Yeah.
It didn't bother him a bit.
I remember, so Bill Knowlton, we'd yep. go to his parents' place and Bill would be there. And he played football, obviously. And I remember
with him, yeah.
him dropping his. Like, what are you doing? You know, he's had it in the pan, the pot of yeah. hot boiling water. And he's like, I'm getting my mouthpiece formed, you know,
shape it.
And I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to remember, but that's kind of, that's how I knew that that's what you're supposed to do. And of course they had you know, they still come with them with the whatever the tails or whatever. So yeah. you can
put it on your
loop it on them. But yep. I think most of the guys cut that off.
Some of them do, and they stick it in there.
And then they stick it somewhere, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they lose it, and then Throne picks it up, and this will do. Yeah. But they are softer now, I think. I feel like the ones that we had were just like, maybe they were like the cast-off Chuck Taylor rubber that was pretty tough.
No, rubber would have been okay, because I'll tell you what we got now is not any different.
I mean, oh, really?
It's still the same hardish plastic mm. that does need to be put into very warm water mm-hmm. to get it more elastic so you can bite into it and then it would form.
Yeah.
Going back to Bill Knowlton, I've got a couple of great stories from back in the day.
Yeah.
The first one was, I don't remember if it was varsity or sophomore JV, or I think it was probably varsity ball, and we were playing some team and crushing them. Would have been my sophomore or junior year, probably junior year. And, Bill, of course we're up like 50 points or something like that. And Bill was our center, and we were moving in, some reserves to come in and get some playing time and some experience. Obviously good coaches like Larry Holstead did that a lot. Mm-hmm. And, next thing you know, come running from the sideline with number 89 on, Bill Knowlton. And, the play was fly Knowlton. he was going to run a jet route right down the sideline. I don't believe he caught the ball.
Oh,
I think he made a valiant effort.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that I do remember quite often, and it wasn't something that just Bill took place in, is out in the practice field to the west of, the current high school football field. That's where we always practiced, and the grass was usually maintained, but there were some longer spots
mm-hmm.
and the grasshoppers in the fall were amazing.
Yeah.
And relatively tame. They were used to people being around, and there's nothing better in this world and he did it to me first. But there's nothing better in this world than catching a grasshopper, and somebody's all strapped up, got their helmet on, they're listening to coach, paying attention to practice, just like what you're supposed to, and you stick a live grasshopper into their ear hole.
Oh my gosh.
It makes a fuss.
And
yeah, somebody had ripped their head off before they undo their chin strap, and little shenanigans like that. I just remember Bill did that to me once and almost killed myself trying to get my helmet off, but
yeah. Well, it's creepy.
And he'd probably deny it.
Yeah. I like that. The way that these pieces of equipment have, one thing I've noticed is that pads have gotten smaller.
Yes.
A lot smaller. And I don't even completely understand how it even works anymore, because the pads that I had, and you probably had the same, they were separate elements that were put in pockets inside the pants.
For sure.
And then looped into your belt.
Oh yeah.
For your hip pads and your tail pad. Yeah,
that had your belt had to go through all that.
And yeah.
You would slide your knee pads in just like they still do today.
Okay.
And then your thigh pads were, you know, something that you were given, and you slide those in.
Yeah.
You change them out for games and things like that. And I don't know, because you were an offensive lineman as well.
Yeah.
And we were required to wear knee braces, you know, just for those falling injuries in the trenches, so that we wouldn't be losing people with bad knees.
Oh, you had to wear them.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you didn't sweat very much in the fall, and then when you put on those neoprene elastic with all sorts of Velcro on mm-hmm. to make sure they don't move very much. And then you tape them on a little bit. And of course you got to have the socks that go up as far as you can get.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if I had socks that went up back in the day, but you know, high top cleats and
yes.
I mean, yeah.
High top cleats.
Yeah.
That weighed 10 pounds each.
Yep.
They were wicked. And obviously those were what the guys on the line wore. I mean, I didn't, yeah. But yeah, that was the football. It was almost like a little boot.
Yeah. And then when you got your pants all ready to go, you have the belt strung through everything ready
yeah.
to go. Like these days they have girdles, and they'll wear like a compression short under the girdle and all that stuff. Back in the day, it was just a jock. That's what
yeah.
you wore.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, there was no,
you could see the lines.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Everybody, even the old NFL footage, you know, oh, yeah. just the jock straps there.
That was just for the cheer.
And the jock straps, the band on those things. Do they even use jock straps anymore at all?
I've not seen one in my 5 seasons.
It was always such an odd experience to have to go, because my dad was always doing something. Well, when you get into the fall, I mean, it's time getting ready to harvest. And so it's like, hey, I need a jock strap, mom. And so you have to go buy a jock strap with your mom.
Bike.
And yeah.
It'd be a bike jock strap.
And the band would be like 4 inches thick.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you wear it as high as you want. It was just weird.
Well yeah. And then in the locker room, you know, you'd walk around in your jock after practice. You
yeah.
take your pants off and you'll walk across the hallway, you're wearing your jock.
Yeah.
And of course, if your buddy's standing there, you always got to pull the elastic one that goes across his rear end and slap, you know, snap him. It never really hurt all that much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the shenanigans and all those different things, but you don't see that anymore.
No.
And of course that was back in the day where everybody showered. I don't know if they
yeah.
I don't know if they do that anymore.
Right.
I know that we have quite a few players that shower after mm-hmm. practice and after games, but that is not the norm.
Hmm.
The vast majority, they want to go back where it's a little more private
mm-hmm.
into their rooms or wherever their apartments and
hmm.
want to shower there and, you know, get all stanky.
That's that's different. That was definitely part of the experience, I guess, would be just, you know, it's after the game, you got to clean up. It's like the coaches send you home, you know, cleaned up.
Well, there's nothing better than 40 naked teenage boys standing around in a locker room. Everybody stinks, and that's just what you're used to.
Yeah, yeah.
There's the stories. Oh, man, and this is a family-friendly
yeah.
thing, but some of the things that occurred in locker rooms back in the days was great. Do you remember Kramer Jezik? Do you remember that stuff? It was kind of like Icy Hot on steroids. I think Argonne Nuclear Labs created it.
Okay.
I have no idea. I'm making that up. But it was, so if you had like a tweaked muscle or something like that, there was no, we're going to send you to physical therapy and we're going to do some.
That was physical therapy.
Yeah, it was just like, put some Kramer Jizik on it and then put put a wrap around it. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that was the nature of the beast. And one day after practice, a good friend of mine was just looking kind of funny at people. I'm like, I knew he had something going on. And a guy that was in our class had gotten out of the shower. And of course, you go over, you start drying off. And this poor young man, his name was Pete. Pete bent over to dry off his legs. And my friend grabbed the tongue depressor full of Kramer Jizik and got him right down there where we'll call it a swimsuit area with Kramer Jizik.
Oh, no.
And there's no washing that off.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Hey there, WooBall fans. Make plans now to kick off the 2024 season at the first Waldorf Gridiron Club Golf Tournament Friday, September 6th at the Gruis Golf Course. Start your home opener tailgating experience early by registering your four-person team now at woogridironevents@gmail.com. Find the link in the show notes. It's just $150 for each team, and that includes meals. If you want to sponsor one of our 9 holes, you can do that too for just $300, which includes the team registration, meals, hole signage, and recognition. This is a fundraiser for the Gridiron Club, and all money raised goes straight to the Warrior Football Program. We'll start registration at 12:15, get a welcome from the coaches, and explain the tournament rules at 12:45, then off to a shotgun start to our scramble at 1 p.m. Think of it as a kickoff. It's just a 9-hole tournament, so there will be plenty of time for our evening meal, flight prizes, and pre-game camaraderie around 5 p.m. You can bring your own cart or rent them right there at the course. The Gruis Golf Course is located west of Forest City at 2724 360th Street in rural Buffalo Center. We can't wait to see you at the Waldorf Gridiron Club Golf Tournament September 6th. Get your team together and register today by emailing woogridironevents@gmail.com, and we'll get you taken care of. Go Warriors!
So yeah, little Grant, we're not talking, that's not equipment, but just right. Some of the different things that, I mean, that's just how you do. I remember my senior year playing Brett, we were ranked coming into the season. We were supposed to do well, but it was our first conference game after the season started. That's back before districts and all that track.
Yeah.
And we played them 0-0 in regulation, and we lost in overtime because we went for two. I mean, Brett had the ball first. That's back before they were West Hancock. Brett had the ball. Of course, they're always a good team.
Mm-hmm.
They have been. They scored, on their third down attempt, which was a joke, by the way. we have relived that glory day many, many times over the years with my friends, but, and then we scored on, I think our second play, marched right in the end zone, and Coach Holstead came out and said, "What do you guys want to do?" "Well, we want to win the game. Let's just do this."
Mm-hmm.
Because we're ranked, preseason. We beat Clear Lake the week before. If we beat West Hancock, who's always good still to this day, for the last 50 years, they've been great. Then we got something to prove, you know, because we never beat them. And, unfortunately, a kid named Jeremy Hill, who actually went to Waldorf to play football after Britt, he was just a beast, and, he stopped our quarterback just a few inches short of the goal line. But during that game, I was a linebacker, and I did a stunt up the middle, and it was just me, and I believe it was one of the Kelly boys. And so technique was put your head down and hit him hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I did hit him real hard. And I don't remember much after that. And then it was halftime. And I remember one of the coaches came over and snapped an ammonia pod and under your nose.
Yeah.
Get you back into the game.
Well, they still have those.
They still have them, but that was kind of you get your bell rung.
And, yeah.
You know, and again, I'm not faulting.
Nobody's testing for a concussion back, man.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I forget my name, but
yeah.
No, but normal. For the most part, again, I'm not faulting anybody. We had great coaches. They cared deeply for us. They still do to this day. But that was just kind of the nature of the beast. I don't remember much from probably the last 3 or 4 minutes of the first half.
The pad getting smaller, certainly in the pants, but even the shoulder pads have gotten smaller. I look at some of what the linemen are wearing, and they look like they're the old like receiver. I'm sure they're not, but whatever it is, but maybe they're just big dudes and they just look that way. But I just recall, like, well, you look at the pads that we wore, they were huge, and almost too big, or yep. I think they were too big. And then if that wasn't enough, then you had like the whole, whatever the thing was, like neck the horse roll? Collar, the neck roll thing in the back to keep your head from snapping back.
See, we didn't have anything that fancy. We had the neck roll.
Yeah, the neck roll.
My first neck roll was kind of the square that came around down into
right.
a point like a collar.
Yeah.
And then I think my junior year, we got the red roll,
yeah.
round neck roll. And we upgraded.
Yeah.
And that was to keep your head from jarring back.
You don't see those hardly ever.
Well, technique has changed so significantly over the years where, it's the head up, cross body, making sure that you're not leading with your head. I mean,
right.
there's all sorts of rules with that. And there was a spearing call
mm-hmm.
when we were in school,
mm-hmm.
but that was something where you'd literally
you'd have to be egregious.
Extremely.
You'd almost have to like fly into them like Superman, just leading with your head.
Yeah, but that was one of the things I recall. That's how you get the big hits is you put a hat on them, you know, quite literally that was what they would tell us. Get a hat on those guys. But,
right.
But yeah, the pads were huge, but, and I think a lot of it has to do with the style now, because if you see these guys wearing their game day jerseys, without pads, they're still relatively snug fitting.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, I don't know what it was like when you were in school, but they were extremely blousy.
The jerseys
yes.
were crazy blousy. I mean, that was like the whole 80s,
yeah.
you know, almost like, yeah, I wear my football jersey, you know, just by itself. And it was
that's what everybody wore.
Perforated like mesh,
yeah.
you know, and particularly a cool garment, even though yeah. that's what the mesh holes were supposed to do is yep. to give you some breathability, but it was a heavy material because yeah. it had to survive. And it was, they weren't soft. I think they got softer over the years of play.
Right.
But they, you get a new jersey. Now they get new jerseys and they're just like a shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're extremely form fitting.
Yeah,
there's a lot of reasons for that. You know,
yeah. it makes a heart attack. You can't grab on. You how many times you grab onto a guy by their jersey as they're running away? Grab their jersey because their jersey's flying like a cape.
Yeah, I mean, think about remember Earl Campbell back in the old Houston Oilers days? He literally had a tearaway jersey because they were blousy. And they would grab onto his jersey and he'd just keep running. And his jersey was constructed in such a way that it would stay together for the most part. But when somebody grabbed onto it, it was made to come apart. It was a tearaway jersey, you know? And, ours were literally my senior year and probably even junior year. You didn't tuck in your shirt because our jerseys came down to our belt line.
Okay. You know, yeah.
That's just the way it was.
Yeah. They were shorter. And for, you know, if you were a guy with a lineman with a belly, there's a lot of, you still see some lineman bellies.
Of course, they need to. They
yeah.
better.
Yeah. But not as much maybe anymore as that used to be. It is the gloves. I remember I didn't have these. I have an interesting sidebar on this, but some of the lineman gloves
mm-hmm.
back when we played were like, they were cut off, you know, so you had your fingertips exposed.
Yep.
But then they had like, like a glove on the palm, but then the tops were like
padded.
Yeah, they were padded. So like your top knuckles were padded
mm-hmm.
and then the above on the back of your hand was padded. And I couldn't afford those. I didn't have those. But I did have bailing gloves. So I was trying to be, you know, and in my freshman year, you're trying to fit in. And I was like, well, I guess I should have gloves if I'm going to be down on the dirt all the time like I was as a guard. And then so I got bailing gloves, and I liked them because you could get that string and you could kind of pull it and pull them tight yeah. and you'd have them, and it was so goofy that I just did that all 4 years. I was like, get a new set of gloves, and by the end of the season, because of the sweat and the mud and the blood or whatever, those things were shaped like your hand. They were form fitting. They had holes in them and everything like that. Yeah. Super proud of them. Really stupid. Like they weren't particularly grippy, you know, or anything like that, but mm-hmm. didn't have any padding on the So, but I don't see those anymore either. I think those, they're too bulky.
No, there are lineman gloves, but they look a lot like what some of the skill guys wear, you know, the people that are going to be catching and trying to have that little tackiness. But they are padded on the top. And if you think about, and we were probably, what, 4 or 5 years apart in school, from school, and we really... I don't know what you had to provide yourself, obviously bailing gloves.
Yeah.
But like really the only thing that, Port City High School at the time made us provide was a jock. Everything.
Yeah. Cause you could provided. Even get your shoes there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had some, you could get your own, but they had shoes for you. Cause they realized like who's buying. It was crazy to think about, you know, the school district has a program and whatever it is, and so they have all of the equipment, and so they have shoes and they have all that, because it would be a crazy idea for expect a family to go out and buy different shoes for every sport,
right?
And it's like my kids have different shoes for, and they're all four sport athletes, so different shoes for everything. You got weightlifting shoes, you got the walking around shoes, you got the, you know, I mean, there's just shoes everywhere.
Yeah.
and then they've got, there's different clothing for every sport, because you know, one sport t-shirt certainly can't transfer to another.
No,
you know,
that'd be crazy.
And all of it has got a certain type of, you know, baseball's got a different kind of sort of equipment or even apparel than, you know, or like a pullover jacket or whatever is different for baseball than what you would have for golf or or track or any of these other sports. And it's just, it's why it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and parents are just used to paying it.
Right.
So, you know, the idea, I think of like public schools, and is that you can participate in all these activities and that you don't have to pay, you know, club fees, but you're still paying for all of this equipment that you're bringing in, your personal stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
a lot more than a jock.
Yeah. You know, shoes, you know, $100 and some bucks a piece on if you get them real cheap.
Yeah.
But $150, $200 for a pair of athletic shoes isn't completely out of the question. Oh, it might be out of the question.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of what you pay. And again, it's what the market will bear.
Well, and they'll customize them. They'll put your numbers on them. They've got, these guys that wear the yellow shoes, there's some bright yellow shoes that, for football.
Okay.
And you see them. And that, as an announcer, I drives me nuts, because it looks like flags. They look like they threw a flag, you know. So I'm like, I'm up there trying, you know, there's a flag on the, no, it's just a dude's shoes.
Yeah,
you know, because the flag is walking away. Well, you know,
and the one thing I'll say about this generation of athlete, and I think it talks a little bit about to just kind of the evolution of equipment for any sport, is that you have some kids that are very, very concerned about how they look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to, again, I'm not throwing stones at them, but the reality is that some of them care more about, I want to know what my number is. I got to have the right eye shield. I got to have the right face mask. Mm-hmm. I got to have the right shoes. I want this color belt. I want all those other things. And I will tell you, more often than not, the kids that go out and produce aren't those kids. You know, now they can be.
Yeah, right.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But everybody wants to look good.
Yeah.
And you know, that's part of the thing that is an area of pride for me, is that I want those kids, when they take the field, to feel like they look.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like they look big time.
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole idea of reimagining the helmets a few years ago. And we still could evolve with something like that. You know, this was
changing decals.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something that we never did. Obviously, you know, when we were in high school, we just had the arrows on the side.
Yeah.
And you had to put them on yourself.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you got to keep them though. That was at the end of the season, you pull them off, you know, and keep them.
I think I still probably have,
I think I do too,
a couple of those arrows, because it looked like Florida State.
Yes. You
know, we didn't get a letter from Florida State saying, hey, sorry, that's the Seminole logo.
Yeah.
But
you could
I think my first year that we, playing varsity ball as a sophomore, you had your number on the side of your helmet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just one side. And then, the next year, Larry Holstead went crazy and got us the spear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we felt pretty big time.
Yeah. Well, it looked cool. I mean, I thought it looked cool.
I did
too. And then I don't know, I can't remember if we did, So like Ohio State might be, you know, they're famous for, they put their tackles on their helmets. You know, they got their little Buckeyes stickers, you know, and.
Well, there's iconic helmets in college football. Mm-hmm. Ohio State is definitely one of them. Michigan. Mm-hmm. You think about Florida. I mean,
Notre Dame with their.
Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
For sure. Yeah. Even SC, you know, I'll throw props out to Southern Cal mm-hmm. and, you know, UCLA, some of those teams that you see their helmet and you just. You know, for instantly it's this,
but, yeah.
You know, and then like you get teams like Oregon, you know, of course they're out there and they got Nike money. Mm-hmm. They have 25 different uniform combinations
right.
with different helmets every week. But again, they, you know, they have the luxury of being out there by the headquarters of Nike and they,
yeah.
I mean, they've married up with the university and it's done well for the university and it's done well for Nike too.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. That's not where they're made. But that's where the headquarters is.
No, sir. Yeah. The people of, Southeast Asia and,
they do a good job.
They do.
They really do.
They do. Those 12-year-olds do a heck of a job making helmets.
I think that the way that, we've communicated, you know, with the way that we communicate plays, that hasn't changed tremendously. And I think it's really just up to however the head coach wants to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen programs where they have these big placards and they've got like four pictures on them and they all mean something different. And one of them doesn't mean anything or whatever. And so I've seen that. Obviously, they have the hand signals. I've seen it where they run in the play, which mm-hmm. I don't like that at all. I was like, just get on. I like fast play.
Yep.
As fast as we can make it. I want to make it so that the referees slow it down because they're like, okay, this is, you're too fast. You know, yep. Baylor, when they were doing their hurry up all the time and everything. I like that, but you have to know your series. And so how do we do it at Waldorf? I'm trying to think, do we run it in or call it signaled in?
If you have an opportunity to watch, and that's from on both offensive and defensive side of the ball. Generally, it's backup QBs as mm-hmm. well as the offensive coordinator. They will signal in the general play, and then they will signal in some variations of it. You know, like, hey, this is the set we're going to be in. And then for the receivers, there's going to be a signal. You know, for the backs, there might be I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that there's that base play. And if you watch, you're going to have, usually backup QBs because
again, right.
they understand that playbook just as well as anybody. And so they're going to be signaling in, and it's usually two of them doing the exact same signal in the exact same time. That way, if you get somebody standing in the way of something,
right.
you know, so they're always close to the OC mm-hmm. or whoever's calling plays, and same with the defense. You know, you'll have, generally your, well, you know, Coach Chapa is the head coach as well as the defensive coordinator. Now, Coach Clary is going to be the co-defensive coordinator. Those guys are working close together. And then of course, you know, and what's Ben's last name? Brummer. Yep.
Not Brumley.
So I don't know who's going to call them in, but again, there's basic sets and there's variations yeah. based on the signal, based on what they're seeing pre-snap. And then you'll hear a lot of yelling, you know, especially on the defensive coaches, you know, that they'll come out in a single set. You know, so the opposing team will come out, the coaches will see something and then they'll start telling the guys that, but, and also out on the field, not necessarily on the offensive side, but definitely your defensive secondary and your linebackers, there's a ton of communication mm-hmm. just about, okay, this is what they're coming up as. And then they're going to start giving each other signals, hand signals and verbal signals all the time. Grant, you may not see that from where you're at, but, it's extremely apparent. I get to see it during practice and things like that as
yeah.
well. So,
I always thought that and this is from, you know, watching the games on the NFL and the, you know, iconic winter games, this, you know, blizzardy conditions, and you'd see these gigantic trench coats that they would wear on the sidelines that were so cool.
Capes.
Yeah. I mean, that just, you're already feeling like a superhero, and, you know, cause you're a football player and you get a gear up, and that part of being, you know, from being a little boy all the way into the NFL is you still want to dress up as a football player. And I just thought that was like really cool. And yet you hardly ever see it. And it's almost kind of, looked down upon if you have to, well, you got to put a coat on. What are you, a sissy? You know?
Well, and I know when I started, I think we had 20 capes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, those late season games around here can get a little chilly, and we usually send it to travel, and we had them on the sidelines for a couple home games as well. And when you have 20 and you got 75 guys on the sideline, somebody's getting cold, and the guys that are just standing there want them.
Yeah.
And of course it's intended for those guys that are, you know, that need to stay warm, but that always happens. So, so I think it was Coach Finley ordered like another 16. So we have like 35, 40 of them, something like that. But, you know, and again, they're just black capes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're perfectly fine, but then they kind of keep you warm.
Right.
Let's be honest. They're, you know, they don't keep you very warm whatsoever. Yeah, but that's just the nature of the beast.
You gotta have to fit over the pads, and it's got to do all that cool stuff. Well, those are things that have changed. But what about what hasn't changed? I mean, anything that comes to mind. I mean, I suppose change is normal in just about everything. But
And the equipment is going to change. You know, just the helmet technology.
Oh yeah, way better
to keep these young people safe. You know, even like things that, like, you know, the Gridiron Club purchased Guardian caps
for
practice, you know.
Yep.
Obviously, that's not something they'll wear during game time. I believe in the NFL now that players can opt to wear Guardian caps during the games. I believe that's one of the new rules. And that may be an NCAA rule, but I thought it was NFL. Hmm. I could be totally off base. But the reality is that, you know, a lot of what we do is really, as far as equipment wise, you want them to look good is secondary. The first thing you want to do is make sure that they're safe.
Right.
You know, my first few years here, it was, all right, what size helmet you want? Large. There you go. And then you put it on and it
sort of fits.
Coach, this is kind of tight or this is kind of loose.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, throw some air in it.
They just grab it and kind of shake it a little bit. Yeah. Grab your face mask. That's probably okay.
And over the last 3 to 4 seasons, as we're issuing equipment, I don't care if it's for spring ball or if it's for fall camp or anything like that. And there's constant adjustment. But, you know, we don't, every one of those kids, that if you're going to wear a helmet, we're going to fit it to you. You know, we're going to put air in, because as we make them try on the helmet, and then it's like, it's kind of like, I want you to look me in the eyes and don't let me move your head 1 inch, and you twist it off to the left and you twist it off to the right and you lift it up and lift it down. And you want to see that skin on their forehead move. You don't want to see it slide whatsoever. And if it feels really good. Well, sometimes comfort and safety don't go hand in hand. So, and then you adjust it. You know, the biggest complaint you get is the cheek pads. You want those nice and tight, so it's not wobbling around in there. But at the same time,
you look like a chipmunk.
Imagine spending a few days with, you know, just take your fists and push them into your cheekbones and then just hold those for say 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And jaw gets tired.
I have what I would call a full face, and always have. So those cheek pads were I didn't look as cool in a football helmet as some of the other guys with longer thinner faces.
Well, and the reality is too, is that, you know, nowadays you can add air to the back of the helmet, the top of the helmet, the sides of the helmet. And I remember, I think it was probably my junior year, we actually had helmets that had little blue, almost like halos with some fingers going up that they could add air to. And that was just to try to get it to fit a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, that was 40 years ago almost. But nowadays we can continue to adjust, different areas. Like if somebody says, well, it's, you know, if it sits down too low on their head or something like that.
Yeah.
You want it about that inch above the eyebrows.
Yeah.
You know, because they still need to be able to see. You don't want it to stick up too high to ride high on that.
Right.
Again, it's all about safety. But and we fit test all those kids.
Yeah.
Absolutely anybody that's going to wear a helmet at Waldorf University, and my assumption is every program in the United States needs to do this. It's a, as much as it's about safety, I don't want to be the guy that said, well, we just gave him a helmet. He should have been fine.
Yeah. No. Well, and they don't, I remember, and it was just a real irritating thing. And that's probably because of the oversized shoulder pads and then, different shaped helmets. But it used to be that like you'd get down into a 3-point and your shoulder pads could push your helmet down. So you like can't see.
Couldn't see.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you were wearing one of those rolls like you were talking about.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I don't remember ever being able to look up back in the day, you know, cause I had the neck roll on and, you know, again, the huge shoulder pads because, and the benefit was, what your listing was in the program. I was listed at my senior year at 210 pounds, 6 feet, 1 inch tall. Well, I was 6'1".
Yeah.
And like 165 pounds.
You got all the gear on.
But still, we had those gloves because the school did provide those, you know.
Yep.
So you had the gloves and then you had, I always got the red, since four
seniors,
red and white, had the red forearm covers.
Yeah.
Back in the day, now it was really utilitarian. Those padded gloves, because, I don't know what it was like, what the rules were when you were playing football. Cause it changed shortly after I got out. And I can't remember when that you could not extend your arms as an offensive lineman. You literally had to keep your hands inside. You used your elbows. That was blocking. Literally your hands are at your chest and your elbows are stuck straight out. And that was blocking, you know, there was no using your hands or anything like that.
Yeah, we didn't have that. Must have changed before we would absolutely use our hands, and you'd always, you know, hook your thumbs.
No, we never did anything like that.
That was you get up under that.
Oh yeah,
you know, the chest piece or whatever, and if you did it good, and they had their shoulder pads were also too big. You
choke them.
Could push that right up in there.
I can't breathe.
That's right.
And so, yeah, I just remember all the little tricks and stuff because, you know, back in the day, we used to be able to line up over center for punts and PATs.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job, I was a linebacker on defense, but when somebody would score on us when they would have to punt, my job would be to line up right over the center.
Yeah.
I mean, right over top of him. And the first thing I'd do is I would kind of almost stand up straight and I'd grab his shoulder pads and souffle, just total souflex. And I'd grab him. That would open a hole right in the middle and we could try to get up the middle.
Right.
You know, now, was it legal? Don't know. Probably not.
Yeah.
But it was really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we got a lot of blocked punts, but, or PATs, but at the same time, hey.
Yeah. But it causes the little bit of a fear factor in the guys trying to kick the ball. But well, this is it is interesting how the things have changed and they continue to change. And of course, you're a subject matter expert in the equipment that the guys have. And there's when you have 130 people that are in the program and they all have to be, you know, they all have to have safe equipment.
Yeah.
They all have to look the same. They have to look good. There's just all that maintenance. And then they do bring in, obviously, their own shoes and they've got their own girdles and things like that and so forth. But it is all about making the team safe and look like a football team is supposed to look and that helps them, I think, in not only, you know, play the game, but feel good about playing the game too. And be able to continue to play the game. And that's really what we wanted to talk about today is just kind of that weird thing that I think every guy that has played the game has a memory, and you can recall the pieces of equipment that you wore. Some of those pieces of equipment are obsolete and not used anymore. Everything is more form fitting. It's a lot harder to tackle people, but you know, the kids are getting, bigger, faster, stronger. They're getting, you know, in a, you used to see like a lineman in the NFL that weighed, you know, 350 pounds and you could tell because they had a, you know, 60 pound belly hanging out and shaking underneath. Now a 350 pound lineman looks like a track star, you know,
and because he's 6'7".
Yeah.
And again, it is bigger, faster, stronger. And again, the evolution of the equipment, the evolution
has to match that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, the focus is always going to be on safety for our kids, safety for the other team as well. Just making sure that everything that we do is going to protect them as much as we can, because we like to keep them in the game. And then at the end of the day, you want them to look good too.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do. And that's something that the Gridiron Club likes to have a hand in. Mm-hmm. And as we spoke about, when I was painted into the bunker, I did kind of go over the committees and explain the things that we're doing and how people can be a part of that. And we had some responses that emailed us and let us know. Another thing that's cool, Andy, about the service that that we use, the Sunnyside Farm Studios uses, is for all of the podcasts now, is you can text the program, and it's pretty cool. Yeah, so all of our listeners, as however you listen to this, each episode has the ability to you can click on that and send us a message. So it's a lot faster.
Cool.
It's a lot easier than, you know, letting out the email address and all of that stuff. So you can text the program and take a look at if you want to be a part of any of our five committees, if you got suggestions for this show, whatever it is that you want.
Tell us what you want to hear.
Or just telling us that you like what we did or whatever. Maybe you got memories of your own about, you know, playing football and we missed some equipment things that I'm sure we probably didn't think of and our listeners will. So that's a cool new feature of this show, and it's good to have you back. And
yeah, it's nice to...
I'm sorry about painting you into the corner, but it was nice. We took a week off last week. Everybody was pretty busy. And so there was like a 27-second, it's like, hey folks, we'll be back in a week. This is what's going on. But I wanted people to know, we really do want to do this all year round and keep talking about Woo Ball and getting everybody familiar with our players and our coaches and the program itself. So it's good to be here and busy this weekend as we head into commencement and all these other things. And like you said, Andy, before you know it, they'll all be back on campus and we'll be rolling into the season.
That's right. And just a side note, it's congratulations to you and your family as Jack graduates from Four City High School and transitions in to being a member of the Woo Ball. Now, I don't know if he told you, but when I came out to his graduation this last weekend, I pulled him off to the side and said, all right, I want you to do something here. I want you to make a name for us, our community, that Jack Thompson from Four City played at Waldorf football and made a heck of an impact. And I think he will. I really do.
Yeah.
I have some high hopes for Jack. I know the coaches do too. And we just couldn't be prouder of having him as part of our program and a member of this community. He's a fantastic young man, and you and Heidi have a lot to be proud of.
Thank you. Yeah, we certainly do.
Yeah. So with that, folks, a little bit shorter episode, but Glory Days is playing in my head. And text us and let us know what you'd like to hear on the Waldorf Gridiron Club podcast. And that's going to do it for us for today, ladies and gentlemen. So for Troy Thompson, this is Andy Buffington, and forever and always, go Warriors. You can join the Waldorf Gridiron Club and be part of the best small college football experience in America.
Just visit our website and pick your membership level. Find us and everything Waldorf Gridiron Club related, including professional photos, at waldorfgridironclub.org.
You can also click on the Support the Show link in the show notes to donate.
And you can even use the United States Postal Service by sending your check to the Waldorf Gridiron Club, P.O. Box 125, Forest City, Iowa, 50436.
It's tax-exempt, hassle-free, and has a level for every budget.
That's right. Anyone can join, even our rivals.
Show your colors. Join the Gridiron Club today.
Get it?
Got it.
Fantastic. The Waldorf Gridiron Club podcast is hosted by Andy Buffington and me, Troy Thompson. Produced by Sunnyside Farm Studios in beautiful rural Forest City, Iowa. Platformed by Buzzsprout and music by Soundstripe. The Waldorf Gridiron Club is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the student athletes of the Waldorf University football program. Our mission is to assist the program in maintaining the best small college football experience in America.